This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Even before President Trump's Liberation Day tariffs were announced in April, owners of businesses big and small had begun bracing for higher costs and trying to figure out how to avoid passing them along to customers. This month, reciprocal tariffs on countries like Brazil, Canada, Vietnam, and India went into effect. And while it's too early to see large-scale implications, what is visible now are closed signs in storefronts where businesses simply could not keep up with the consequences and unpredictability of tariff hikes. So what does history and data tell us that indicates what could be on the horizon? Max Vorkin is an economist and an economics policy advisor with the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. And he joins us now to provide some insight. Max, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you very much. A real pleasure to be here, Elaine.
So, Max, I'd like to start with some real-life experiences, the history of now, as it were. Earlier this month, we asked our social media audience if they felt the impact of tariffs on their pocketbooks, and several folks said that prices of some of their favorite products had already gone up. On Facebook, Joel Matthew wrote, "I'm not a business owner, but I buy coffee, or the coffee I buy at Aldi went up from $5 to $7.50 in 1 week for a 50% Trump tax tariff increase." Then he went on to say something about our history with tea and revolts. We did talk about coffee market volatility specifically and challenges with local coffee roaster Jason Wilson back in February. This was before Liberation Day. But Max, is the price hike in coffee that Joel and others are seeing due to tariffs specifically or something other?
Well, I guess that we are slowly, gradually, but surely seeing how some of the effects of tariffs are, permeating and becoming more evident in some of the things that we buy as consumers. Mm-hmm. So I don't know the specifics of coffee, but definitely one of the categories in which tariffs had a big impact was food and beverages. Mm-hmm. So definitely we are seeing some of the effects gradually in the stores as well.
Mm-hmm. Have people been asking you about this just on a casual basis because of what you do?
Yes, for several months now, mm-hmm. They've been asking me, what are my views on this? Do they make sense? So people are very, very interested about what's going on and what to expect.
Mm-hmm. Now, we also inquired with folks on social media about business impacts. And regarding shuttered enterprises, Michelle Berg on Facebook said, "My friend's business had to close because the parts they used were manufactured in China. Nowhere else in the world makes those parts. Their product became prohibitively expensive, so they had to shut down." So you've just talked about food. When it comes to parts, like things that we don't see, but are components maybe in the larger stuff, manufacturing is a major concern around these tariffs. What are some of those imported goods that are not food related that have been hit by this year's tariffs, and which countries are they coming from?
Well, here in the U.S., we source many different things from all over the world. For many years, we enjoyed a level of tariffs that were very low, and firms, big and small, they got used to and adjusted their suppliers to that reality. Now things have changed. And definitely, even for businesses that were not so directly exposed to the rest of the world, they may start being a bit more affected. For example, if you are a small business and have a fleet of trucks to deliver your products, well, the price of steel, aluminum are now going up. Mm-hmm. Tariffs are very steep. Producers of cars will definitely feel some of that, perhaps pass along that in forms of higher prices and their, you know, the cost of running your small business if you need to buy or replace your trucks, your cars, will be impacted.
Mm-hmm. Your work, Max, involves a lot of research. And just a few months ago, you and your colleague, Cassandra Marks, published a St. Louis Fed blog post that examines the impact of U.S. tariff increases in 2018 and 2019. This is pre-pandemic. And that post says that in early July 2018, there were three sets of goods that were affected by statutory tariff increases. Can you talk with us about what those goods are, what those three sets happen to be, to kind of help us understand a little bit of what we've talked about already?
Absolutely. So in early 2018, there were the first wave of tariff increases. It started by affecting the imports of solar panels and washing machines initially, but then expanded and for the most part affected the imports of Chinese goods. And there were different sets of Chinese goods, some durables, some of those were machines used by businesses, aerospatial, components, but then eventually came to consumer goods.
Mm-hmm.
And the increases in tariffs were in the order of 25%. The level of tariff on some of these Chinese goods were low, 3% or so on average before that, and it went up to, for those sets of goods, to close to 25% or so. So that's the experience of 2018. Now, it affected, I would say, roughly 50% of the imports from China at the time. And it was just contained, the only country mostly affected was just China.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole impact was a bit more limited. What we're seeing today is something that is, much
broader.
And with many different types of increases. Mm-hmm. China, for sure, is still one of the countries in which is affected by these tariffs, a lot more than others. But yeah.
Is there a way that, because of the pandemic, we've sort of forgotten about what the effects of those 2018-2019 tariffs were? And so, what we're feeling about what we see now, is it feels more dramatic for that reason?
I don't know if it feels more dramatic for that reason. I would say because the level of tariffs and the countries affected was a bit more limited, effectively, the tariffs were not, the effects of the tariff were not as strong as potentially can be now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably, we're seeing a bigger, and we feel it more just because of the size and how broad these tariffs are.
The scope,
yeah.
Before we go much further, what exactly are statutory tariffs? Why is that an important distinction?
Yeah, so these are the legal tariffs, what's in the U.S. tax code. So eventually, from there are some exemptions, the fine print. Then even companies can actually ask to be exempt for one reason or another, and the government may or may not allow that. So what the law says, and effectively what on average is, firms and importers are paying, could be slightly different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So reciprocal tariffs are really what we are talking about now. And these apply to numerous countries and trading partners. I think the number was 70. What is it that we as American consumers are possibly facing with that many trading partners levied with this increase in tariffs? Because before it was just China, as you said, it was more isolated. Now with this scope, what is it that we're looking at?
Well, I think that the experience from 2018, 2019 helps us understand, some of these effects. And now we will, this will be magnified. So we have some models that help us understand what these effects could be in terms of the level of imports that we're going to end up having, some of how prices may react. So I think that now, you know, we're going to definitely start seeing some effects on prices becoming, you know, increasing. We are already seeing some of that. And this is a process that just started. You know, it does feel like it's been a long time, but it's only been a few months. Mm-hmm. And it's a gradual process, right? So gradually, we're going to see the prices going up across the board, you know, even for reasons that, you know, don't seem so evident, you know, just because of how the production chain is organized and what we buy from where. Indirect effects are going to be important as well.
Mm-hmm. Is a tax a tax? Does it matter whether we're talking about statutory or reciprocal?
Well, a tax is a tax. Someone is going to end up, you know, paying for these tariffs. Right now, we're still trying to figure out who is doing much of that. Is it like firms absorbing? Are the consumers, you know, paying more for what they used to buy? Or is it that actually, you know, foreign producers are lowering their prices? And, mm-hmm. you know, we're still measuring these things, but a tax is a tax. And yeah, the difference between statutory versus, you know, what actually happens, you know, it's just some of the small details of, you know, some of these goods may not receive a tariff as high as, you know, announced. But other than that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
How long will it take? You said that it is going to take time. How long do you think it will take to see and then to examine and analyze some of these larger scale effects that will ultimately show up in policy?
Mm-hmm. Well, the experience of a few years ago, 2018, 2019, tells us that this is something that will take 12 to 18 months to, you know, settle down mm-hmm. into a new higher level of prices, I would say. Now, everything is changing, and it keeps changing. The situation is very fluid, so we don't have the policies are first need to settle down policies first, and then the economy will gradually settle down to what we think it will be.
Mm-hmm. And what is it that you and your fellow economists are tracking or paying close attention to regarding these 2025 tariffs?
Well, definitely we are looking at the amount of imports coming from different countries from abroad, not just the level of tariffs, but if you start importing less, this is a sign that maybe you can shift your production from places with high tariffs into places that low tariffs or domestically, and that's going to matter. It's going to matter for, you know, the impact on inflation, but also is going to matter for revenues, right? If you end up switching to low tariff places, you know, revenues from the government will be lower. Mm-hmm. Also, we are tracking closely the effects on prices, different types of prices, particularly how they may end up affecting prices that consumer pay for many different things, not just goods, but also services, which will probably be affected in a more indirect way.
Mm-hmm. And to finish here, you know, these tariffs, we're talking about shoppers, about consumers, business owners. This is what we're going to get into in our next bit of conversation. Small business owners and especially micro business owners, they've been bracing themselves since April when these increases in tariffs were first announced. And then, you know, as we've mentioned, there have been changes, there have been pauses and cancellations to contend with as well. Is there any specific good that maybe you are looking at, that your colleagues are looking at as kind of a bellwether for what is coming ahead?
We don't have one particular good that it's helping us predict what's coming ahead. We definitely look into all of them many different categories. The thing with these policies is that they are very different, very heterogeneous across countries, across types of goods. And we're still trying to measure what these effects are.
Okay, so there's a good bit of wait and see.
A little bit of wait and see. And, yeah. We only have data for, PCE prices from June, so it takes a while for us to get the data that we need to properly assess the situation.
Yeah. Max Vorkin is an economist and an economics policy advisor for the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. Max, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get perspective on how business owners and customers are feeling the effects of President Trump's tariffs. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation about President Trump's Liberation Day tariffs. Before the break, we discussed them with an economic policy expert in the context of history and data. How they've affected business owners and consumers in the St. Louis region is where we're turning our focus now. Here to do that with us is Shane Propeisel, Chief Operating Officer of Global Foods Group. Shane, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, Elaine.
So, Shane, the last time you were on our show was soon after Liberation Day. I think it was April 2nd. And that is when President Trump called that day Liberation Day after announcing reciprocal tariffs on goods from several international trading partners that includes China, India, Taiwan, and South Africa, among many others. And we had talked then about expectations. What has your reality been since April? Has expectation and reality sort of aligned?
Yeah, in terms of trying to gauge the specific percentages, I think it's actually, we do have some concrete numbers, obviously with our largest markets being East Asia, the EU, knowing that it will be 15% for the EU, 19% for large blocks of Southeast Asia, and 15% for Korea and Japan, that at least gives us something to work off of. I think before that, we were really just kind of shooting in the dark about how much merchandise to carry. Do we order it now? So we're hoping that, again, with the way it's been handled, we're not sure if this will change tomorrow or in 6 months, but that certainty is really welcomed. I know kind of the big overarching question is China. I know that that's been kind of kicked the can down the road until November. So we hope that, the parties can come to an agreement that will kind of smooth things over and still make a lot of businesses still be able to operate. But we were operating in a better spot than we were in April, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. And I think people do think about food immediately because that is, we consume on a daily or regular basis. But we also had an opportunity to speak with Jade Moore. And she's the owner of Sincerely the Craft, which is a metaphysics store in downtown or in Midtown. And they sell crystals, herbs, ritual oils, and handmade jewelry. Jade told producer Maya Norfleet that several of the products she sells have been difficult to come by.
Our shelves are a lot lighter right now, and it's because about 76% of what I sell comes from small makers and indie businesses, mostly overseas. But I'm talking about family-run mines, hand carvers in India, artists in South Africa that deal with our waste beads. These aren't big, faceless factories. They're people I know and trust and I've been working with for 9 years. And our community relies on us to source ethically. And every item on my shelf has a story and a maker behind it. So what this, what the tariff impact has done is raise those prices because I don't buy in huge max quantities. They're small, so we get hit with a lot of huge tariffs because of that, or we're about to even more than we already have.
And that is Jade Moore, owner of Sincerely the Craft. Nisheen, can you provide a specific example or two of a product that you sell or items that make your work possible that has been subject to price hikes because of these tariffs?
Yeah, actually, I think Jade is spot on. I think, unfortunately, a side effect of these tariffs is that there will be less choice. So that doesn't mean that, for example, there won't be any more coffee in the market. But to her point, it will be the big guys, you know, it'll be the Lavazzas of the world, the, you know, the Jacobs in Germany. So these big companies, multinationals, they can still get their product to shelf. They have scale. But unfortunately, to her point, those artisanal makers, small family factories, it's just not cost prohibitive to get their product to market, and they're going to lose out. It's just more expensive for them to operate. You know, oftentimes their costs are higher. They can't produce as much. And so for the consumer, I think they'll just be less choice. I think, you know, another example would just be fish sauce. You know, there's maybe in Southeast Asia, five or six huge companies, and you can find them, these, you know, Squid Brand, Terapos. You'll see them in most international grocery stores, but the small batch producers that make a really premium product, you know, they're already priced at a premium. And I think with these tariffs, it just won't be sustainable for a lot of retailers to continue to carry them.
Mm-hmm. Now, when President Trump announced the reciprocal tariffs in April, he said that it was to boost American businesses. But the main criticism of these tariffs is that there are some items that simply cannot be made in the U.S. Jade Moore had this to say about domestic sourcing for goods she sells at Sincerely the Craft.
In my business model, being accessible in this business isn't optional, it's essential. So we're here to serve the community and ensure that we're not layering on the prices of tariffs or extra pricing models. So we have saluted the problem by going local, hyper-local. So we are working with a couple of local artists. We've already started doing this and pivoting to this form of business model in the last 2 or 3 months. 76%, like I said, of what we sell come from small indie businesses. About 20% of that was coming from local, and now it's moved up to about 38-40%, and we're intaking more local vendors and businesses to this day, and we're hoping to change over to have about 70-80% come from right here in St. Louis, and I'm talking about hyper-local. However, as much as I'd like to, I can't get Brazilian amethyst from Idaho. So we're going to have to import those type of things.
And again, that was Jade Moore, owner of Sincerely the Craft. So Shane, your grocery stores, Global Foods and United Provisions, they specialize in international goods, and Global Foods Group has restaurants that serve, you know, Thai and Japanese food. So to put it plainly, are you basically jacked? I mean, the last time you were here, we talked about Kikkoman, soy sauce made in Wisconsin. But what is the situation for you all?
Yeah, I think like a lot of other businesses, we actually loaded up a lot of inventory when the negotiations for the tariff rates were still ongoing, again, just being unsure of where they were going to be. And part of that is not just our own restaurants, but we sell wholesale to a bunch of other international restaurants in St. Louis. And, you know, anyone in that industry can tell you it's hard enough. But when your cost of inputs goes up 15-20%, that's the difference between opening, being able to continue operations, and closing. And so we had a decent amount. But not just us. I know a lot of other stores like us were kind of running low on, quote unquote, the old stock that we were able to get at a pre-tariff price. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, now it's just, again, I kind of mentioned those tariff rates, 15%, 19%, 20%. Unfortunately, you know, those costs are going to be incurred. You know, we're negotiating all the time with our suppliers. But, you know, I think, unfortunately, we're going to start seeing those kind of, you know, price increases the next few months, unfortunately, right in time for the busy kind of, you know, Thanksgiving coming up, big feast season. It's going to be tough, but we're managing this as best we can.
Mm-hmm. Is there one decision that you've had to make that's been particularly hard when it comes to, you know, maybe not carrying something or just facing a lot of difficulty in figuring out an alternative?
For us, it's more of internal. It's honestly just, you know, we have to put up a lot more cash flow to secure the product. There's, I would say, you know, the importers are also a little bit skittish. So even for us, there's less to buy in the market because kind of the middlemen that get their product from overseas to the U.S., they're buying less. And so before, if we had great terms, and we've always had great relationships with them, for them, for their cash flow needs, they're just requiring, you know, cash up front or payment up front. And so it's just trying to manage that balance of having merchandise at a fair price. But again, there's cross pressures from, you know, consumers are feeling skittish and there's less merchandise. It's just kind of balancing the two out.
Mm-hmm. One of the last things Jade Moore shared with us, what she's running is, I believe, a micro business, and that means that she does not have the number of employees that qualifies for a small business, and the amount of money that you're talking about, having to put up capital up front, that is a major concern. But the kind of human impact there is of these tariffs, you know, when you talk about artisans overseas and whom their work supports. We're talking about families. They might be middle class, they may be lower class, people who really struggle to make a living. How is it that that you think about those things? What are your greatest concerns about the future of small business and micro business in St. Louis?
I think in general, just a consolidation, and you're seeing it in every industry. I think what a globalized kind of trade system allowed us to do is for folks to kind of go out on their own. They had a good idea. They had a good product. They were able to build their own way. And with the way, you know, the economy is kind of going now, I'm afraid that only the largest players who are the best capitalized will be the only ones to be left standing just because, you know, they have that scale to be able to. And the small and medium-sized businesses, which, you know, again, we offer the variety. We offer the things that are harder to find, that are out of the way. Unfortunately, I think it just will be less choice for the consumer at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. And you also relate because your parents started the business as just a market, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's a new challenge every day, and this is just another one. But, you know, working diligently at it, I hope to come off on the other side. But, you know, it's definitely a different game than they were playing 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Shane Preisel is Chief Operating Officer of Global Foods Group. Shane, thank you so much for coming back to talk with us again.
Thanks for having me.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.